to another episode of Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm Ruby.
And I'm Shaylock.
And together we are father-daughter duo playing through the Pokemon video games, watching the anime, and reading the Pokemon Adventures manga. And this week we are covering one chapter of the manga, and we're going through six episodes of the anime. But before we get into that, let's catch up where we're at in our own lives. As far as other Pokemon stuff is concerned, today is currently actually Mankey Community Day, and we're sitting here catching Mankey.
Yeah, that's right. I already have my shiny Annihilate, but it wouldn't hurt to have a few more, and I did pay for the Community Day quest so that I can at least, you know, do the quest, because I like to do that. I've been playing a lot of the Pokemon Pocket TCG, or Pokemon TCG Pocket, and that's probably the right way to say that. Yeah, it's been kind of fun. It's already starting to lose a little bit of the shine now. Like, I've played it a bit, and now, like, the novelty is worn off, so I don't know if I'll continue, but, or at least not more than just casually, but it's been fun otherwise. The game is kind of fun to play on occasion. It's nice and streamlined compared to the normal stuff, so a little bit less thought having to be put into it. I've yet to play real people yet, though, so maybe that might change my mind on it all.
I feel like playing real people would be fun.
Sure. And then, as far as our Pokemon watching, we've been getting a little bit caught up and ahead on what we need for our future episodes, as we try to keep a few episodes ahead, just so that when we have to take a break or whatever, we don't lose ground. So that, you know, if we get sick or there's any accidents or something. And yeah, so this will be our last episode before our 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's, before we come back in January with episode of all anime, no manga. And then a special return. Oh, and I recently just got my Elite Trainer box for Surging Sparks. So that will be what we're going to be opening on our card section today. So that'll be fun. And I already pre-ordered some stuff for the next set, because that's where the Terastalized Eeveelution cards are supposed to start showing up, it sounds like. So, ooh. Yep, very excited for that. And I pre-ordered two of those boxes because I want more of those packs. outside of the realm of Pokemon, I also got a super exciting shipment that arrived a couple days ago. And we spent pretty much all day yesterday putting it together. But I had ordered the Lego set for the X-Mansion. And it had a special thing when I ordered it. So I also got like a fun like reading area with a nice bookshelf full of books and everything, and a person with their chair reclining in it. So that was really cool. And we really liked the globe on top of the shelf too, because it was just like the normal piece for a minifigure head, but it was painted with the
was fun.
The world on it. So that was cool. And then it also came with Professor X in an actual wheelchair instead of his like 90s yellow hover chair thing. And a different kind of, like, the more modern movie version of Cerebro was kind of how it looked. Whereas the X-Mansion had kind of an older style that was hooked up to a wire still, and he had his cool 90s wheelchair or hover chair, and had a Sentinel, and lots of other characters to fight him, and just and a lot of fun little hidden things inside there, too. Like, there was a thing that, because we all took a different instruction manual to put different parts of it together, and Rosella was the one that was working on one section, and she had this little thing that had, like, Charles Xavier's signature on it and something about Charles on there. And I think it was, like, the deed for the mansion or his will or something like that. Because she later told me that after putting it together, it's underneath the floor in one of the rooms. So you can't even see it if you're just looking at the mansion. You'd have to pry open the floor part.
Interesting.
Because they tucked it away safe.
I didn't know that was tucked under the floor.
So yeah, there's just some random things like that that are just like out there. They're just kind of hidden. Like, there's also flowers in the attic, and you don't really see them unless you like take off a couple parts of the roof on the center area. And that's just kind of obvious. Well, for those that know the X-Men comics, and a nice little Easter egg to Storm, because that's where she keeps the flowers, and she has her whole little garden up there.
Yeah, I built most of the danger room.
Yeah, you had the danger room. I had like the entrance, the Sentinel, and the lab/Cerebro area, which was right above the entrance, because I had the centerpiece. And then Rosella got the classroom and, like, Wolverine's room or something.
I enjoyed building it.
Yeah, it was a fun day. Nice, relaxing time. I had to take a little break because we had to help somebody move. But after that, we were back at it.
So with that out of the way, let us dive into our manga chapter called Quilava Quandary. Alright, which is volume 9, chapter 108.
So, last time we had Gold end up with the breeding center couple.
Mm-hmm.
And tricked into working there, I think, right?
Yeah, to help the Pokemon, yeah.
So now, that lady leads Gold into the library of their daycare center, and Gold finds a book full of past Pokemon League winners. I really like this part, because it shows a picture with Red standing with Snorlax, Eevee, Pikachu, Gyarados, Aerodactyl, and Poliwrath, which was the group he had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and it even lets us know that this is Red. I mean, we can all see that, but it's just...
This is Winner Red.
Right. And so Gold takes note of the Poliwrath specifically and asks Polybo if he'll look like that when he grows up. The old lady says that if he trains him well and takes care of him, then yes, he will. However, it's more to it than that. It's just like the anime being a punk about it too with that kid. It takes a water stone.
Oh, yeah.
It's more than just the training. But she said, did say take care of him, which means, you know, you'd have to give him a water stone. And even more specifically, I think Gold asked if he'll look like that when he grows up, which, like, when he does grow up and evolve, unless he takes a branching evolution, that is what he will look like, as long as he's also well taken care of, because he could look like a wimpy-looking Poliwrath or a sickly one if he's not taken care of. So, I mean, to look like a strong Poliwrath. So, I mean, like, it's not as off-base as the anime was.
And, well, like, all Pokemon have their differences or something, like...
Right.
Wasn't there an episode of the anime where a bunch of Pokemon looked the same, but someone could tell each one apart?
The Sunflora episode.
Ah, yes.
James, because he grew up with them with his grandmama or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So then she has Gold go further into the room, and then she suddenly locks the room, and there's a bunch of tough-looking Pokemon inside with him now, and she tells him he has to stay in there until he beats them all. And there's a Kangaskhan, a Tauros, a Girafarig, Ekans, Primeape, and Donphan. So Gold gets ready to use his tricks with the pool cue and stuff, but the old lady tricks him over so she can take it all out so that he can learn to utilize a Pokemon's power and skill and not just his fun tricks that he has. Gold apparently named Togepi Togepo, not too surprising, and has it use Metronome. Cyndaquil is using Smokescreen, and the lady helps Gold by telling him what to do and what to look for after he tries Expo against the ground-type Donphan.
Oy, stupid little Gold.
He's told to switch to water-type for that one, and so he uses Polybow and water-guns it. Then we suddenly cut to Ecruteak City, which is where our last gym battle has been, and where we're trying to get to in both the anime and manga. Someday we may get there. So then this girl, Jasmine, that the old man had talked to on the phone, she shows up in Ecruteak City, and she says that she wishes Olivine and Goldenrod weren't so far apart. So I gotta assume that she's coming from Olivine.
Yep, probably.
And then it looks like she has two Magneton with her. And then there's an earthquake suddenly in the middle of Ecruteak, and she falls into, like, a crevice or whatever.
Because, like, typical things, it breaks right underneath her feet.
Right, the ground splits apart.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go back to Gold. He's having a tough time with Primeape because he doesn't have anything good against fighting type. But then he figures out how to power up his fire type moves by having Sunbow use Sunny Day, which changes the environment of the battle, which is something that starts to be a thing in at least future games. I mean, I guess it's in Johto as well, but we haven't really been able to do much with that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Expo uses Ember again. He thinks this might be hard on his Pokemon, but the old lady tells him that they need to go through that if they are to get stronger. But something is wrong with Cyndaquil. Gold looks over at the shuddering Pokemon, and then... Quilava is here!
And by the way, he was shaking on the last page. I was like, is he sick or something? And I was like, oh, he's probably evolving.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to, like, throw us off a little bit. So.
Yeah, like, he turned kind of pale and then was, like, shaking a bunch. I'm like, you okay?
The old lady asks if Gold will trust her now, and he claims he'll follow her to the ends of the earth now that he has seen the results of this training. So he rushes back in to take care of the rest of the Pokemon that he was supposed to battle. But then there's an emergency broadcast about the earthquake in Ecruteak. the place is being evacuated, and the old couple are worried about Jasmine because they know that she had to pass through there to get to them. So the old lady tricks Gold into going to find Jasmine. Before he leaves, for his hard work, he is given a King's Rock, which is used for a few evolutions in this game, one being Slowking. I believe, anyway, because I think you'd need the King's Rock in Pokemon Go, so I gotta assume.
Yeah, probably.
In Ekrateke, there are aftershocks still going through, and so Gold needs to hurry alongside his Quilava, Expo. Then we see, flying over the city, hanging onto a Murkrow, Silver, who is looking down at the damage, and flies toward it. To be continued.
Bum, bum, bum!
Interested to see where that's going, and who is Jasmine? If your theory from last time is accurate, and she's a gym leader, then with the Magneton, I almost wonder if she's an electric gym leader.
Daddy, let's train up our ground types.
Let's do it.
All right, and now that we have finished with the manga, let us jump into the anime.
Woohoo!
Episode 168, or Season 4, Episode 9. Two Hits and a Miss, or Capoeira. Tai Fushigidan? Fushigidan Nei! Kakuto? Tai Ketsu! With 3 exclamation points. Or Capoeira versus Fushigidan Nei. Hand to hand showdown. With 3 exclamation points.
So
Tai is versus.
Like every week I do a couple Who's That Pokemon posts on like Facebook and stuff. And I started with Fushigidan Nei. Because I decided to start with the number one entry in the Pokedex, which is Bulbasaur. So I knew that that's what that meant, is Fushigidan Nei. I knew who that is. And obviously watching the episode, we figure all that out too. But Capoeira is interesting because I always struggle to pronounce it, but it's Capoeira or something like that. It's a style of fighting. It's called dance fighting a lot of times.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, like, breakdancing type moves a lot of times involved in it, where you're, like, spinning your feet around, and what do we see in this? Somebody's spinning around on their head, kicking their feet around. So Capoeira is Hitmontop. So yes, this is all about Hitmontop versus Bulbasaur. So, starting off, we see a Tauros almost hit Ash and company as it rushes by, and there's someone chasing after the Tauros. Then Ash sees the Pokemon is about to run into an old man, so he jumps into action. He uses Bulbasaur to stop the Tauros, which impresses the old man.
Because when the Tauros was running towards the old man was about to pull out a Pokeball, and he looked like he was going to be perfectly capable, but then he stopped when Ash came.
Well, right, because Ash didn't see that.
Yeah.
He just looked like a helpless old man walking down the path.
Yeah, so he wanted to see how it played out with Ash.
Yep. So then, impressed, he takes Ash and the gang to his fighting-type Pokemon school, and they hear counting, and the old man explains that the noise is his granddaughter's foolish way of trying to train Pokemon, because she's giving, like, a dance count. So here we meet Hitmontop, the granddaughter's Pokemon that she's training, along with, because she's trying to teach the other students how to do it, too,
How do you what?
How to train Pokemon her way.
Ah, yeah.
Keeping them graceful and light on their feet.
Which can be helpful, but there needs to be a mix.
Yeah. Yeah, the girl explains that Pokemon attacks need to be graceful. The old man feels she's turning the school into a circus. And when the students that were learning from the granddaughter see the old man, they bow to him because it turns out he is the Shihan of the dojo, which is the master of the dojo, basically. And then in our version, the American version, Ash thinks that Shihan is some kind of food.
But if you thought it was a Pokemon, it would be one track Ash.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's why I bring this up, because in the Japanese version, it would have one track Ash, because he apparently thinks it's some new kind of Pokemon.
Well, then we have to count it.
No, if we ever go back through after we learn our Japanese, then we'll count it. We only know that because I looked into it. We didn't know it watching it.
But it's a one-track Ash. Come on, we have to count. Otherwise, I'll never forgive
going,
you.
From here forward, the number that we have, it'll say the number that I'm suggesting with an asterisk on it. So if people remember, if anybody asks, what's the asterisk for? because there's possibly another one.
There's definitely another one.
Anyway, so the old man introduces Ash to his granddaughter Chigusa as the old man's replacement as Shihan. Like, he wants Ash to replace him. Mm-hmm. So he's like, to his granddaughter, hey, this is Ash. He's going to replace me as Shihan. Which, of course, you know, she's not happy about because she wants to be Shihan.
And Ash doesn't even want to be, and she's getting all mad at him, and he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, this is not what I want. What? But the old man says the Shihan needs to teach the traditional ways and not ballet, which is why he's not going to let Chigusa be Shihan. So then Chigusa is going to battle Ash, even though he doesn't want to have anything to do with this position.
But and, he never declines a battle.
Sure. But he also doesn't have a fighting type Pokemon, which he points out. But the old man's like, well, Bulbasaur has the spirit of a fighting type.
Well, you could just borrow Brock's fighting type.
Brock doesn't have a fighting type.
Yeah, he's got Juju. Ah!
Now, before the battle can take place between the two, someone else shows up at the entrance and wants to challenge the Shihan to a battle. This guy has been called the Dojo Destroyer, and I think the old man had heard of him before. Or maybe Chigusa, or maybe both. I don't know. They'd heard of him before. Because he's been going around defeating other Shihans and taking their plaques so he can open his own dojo someday and display them there.
To have his students' respect.
Yep. Which, like, on that surface, like, especially in our culture, that seemed like, ooh, this guy is, like, bad news. I don't like him. He's just beating him just so he could, not to take over their roles, really. He just wants to take their plaque and go do his thing. But in the traditions there, it actually makes a lot of sense, I think. And it's actually not so bad, as we learn, because he's not really a bad dude.
Yeah. At first when he appeared, I was like, oh, what's he doing? And that, there's nothing wrong with him.
And, on top of it all, the Shihans do agree to the battle.
Yeah.
And he's not cheating.
No, he's really just a good person.
And the dude's name is Shiro. And, of course, the old man accepts the challenge, just like the other Shihans have. That's part of the reason he does, too. He's like, well, the others accepted it, but don't think it'll be easy. That's what he says. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is spying on everyone and takes an interest in Hitmontop. The battle begins, and it is Shiro's Hitmonlee versus the old man's Machoke. But both the old man and the Machoke have their backs seize up. Because they're both old.
It was kind of funny seeing the Pokemon have his back seize up, too.
Yup. Oh, and it turns out, at this point, I think we learned that the old man's name is Kenzo. And since Kenzo can't fight, Chigusa decides to take his place, much to Kenzo's frustration. Because the battle still has to be done.
Otherwise, they have to forfeit.
Yup. And the battle isn't going well, and Shiro is going to win, but then Team Rocket shows up with an interesting intro.
Forget your match and prepare for trouble.
We made our catch, and we made it double. And they manage to net both Hitmontop and Hitmonlee. And then we have an irritating interruption with Wobbuffet getting in the way of Meowth's closing statement again. And we flow from there into our Who's That Pokemon trivia? This Pokemon's power was unleashed when it was bitten on the head. Then Bulbasaur uses Razor Leaf to free the Fighting-type Pokemon, and Team Rocket send in Arbok and Victory Bell. But Victory Bell is a distracted Pokemon, as it eats James. And James has a funny line to go with it. He's like, I choose Victory Bell, and Victory Bell choose me! Which is also, then, a catching catchphrase. There's a bit of battling, and then some Razor Leaf to the balloon, and Team Rocket is blasting off again! Ding! The battle between Chigusa and Shiro is postponed to the next day since their Pokemon are worn out. That night, Chigusa is overconfident in her victory tomorrow, thinking she almost won earlier in the day, which she did not, clearly. She was totally going to lose. Mm-hmm. And she's super confident still. I'm like, were you not paying any attention, lady? Kenzo tells her she's wrong, and then gets Ash to try and train Chigusa. Ash uses his Bulbasaur and totally takes out Chigusa and her Hitmontop. So then Chigusa learns from Kenzo that Ash won because Ash is truly a team with Bulbasaur. So Chigusa learns to be a team with her Hitmontop, and so the next day the match goes much better and Chigusa defeats Shiro. Yes, I know. Anticlimactic. I didn't, like, make a big deal about it, but it just, you knew it was coming.
You, like, skipped all the training and everything.
Well, that was not really... That was training. What do you want me to say about it?
Didn't Team Rocket show back up?
Not during that. We're getting there. So Chigusa learns to beat a team with her Hitmontop, and so the next day, the match goes much better, and Chigusa defeats Shiro. The guy accepts his defeat well, which shows that, like, okay, he's not really all that bad of a person, and things are about to part amicably, but then Team Rocket returns with a new busted bot. This one looking like a Meowth with boxing gloves. And they give us another interesting intro. But it doesn't launch into the rest of the motto, with Meowth just saying, etc. Like, they started with the interesting intro, but then he's just like, and etc.
Prepare for trouble, we want a rematch.
And make it double, Natch. Hitmontop is grabbed, but he's freed right away, and after a kick from Hitmontop, Pikachu zaps Team Rocket, and they fly off with a ding. Because they don't say their line this time. They just fly off. And our who's that Pokemon? It's Slowking.
Hopefully you weren't too slow to get that.
Alright, so our tally. Alright, so we have two interesting intros. We have an irritating interruption. A distracted Pokemon with Victory Bell chewing, or choose James. A busted bot and a catching catchphrase. All right, and then we gotta rank it.
I don't feel like it was a super strong episode. It was cool, and I liked the whole Japanese thing, but I don't feel like it was super strong.
I would argue that it was actually really strong, because they all train their muscles and everything quite a bit.
Maybe.
All right, so where are you thinking?
Maybe above Fossil Fools and under Carrying On?
Yep, that's fine with me, if that's what you want it.
Now let's dive into episode 169, or season 4, episode 10, A Hot Water Battle, or Genguru no Sanbiki Onsen Batodu, 3 exclamation points, or The Three of the Jungle, a battle in the hot springs.
The gang end up sweating in some tropical location. There are Apom and a Mankey hanging around in some banana trees. Ash decides to climb up and get one. A banana, that is. But slips on a peel and goes over a cliff, which Brock ends up doing as well, and they both find themselves in some hot springs and are quite enjoying it.
And they've got their backpacks and clothes on and everything.
Yeah, well, that's because they were... It's not like they slipped out of their clothes.
Wow. But, like, if they slip in and... Wouldn't you try to get your backpack out as soon as possible?
If there was anything that would really be ruined by any prolonged... time there, but already getting drenched and soaked, most of the stuff they have probably is fine. It's not like they have a lot of electronic devices or anything.
Just their Pokedex.
Which always seems to work just fine, so must be waterproof.
The badges could leak out.
The badges just aren't as best.
Get your stuff. Isn't Brock carrying the food?
Well, they're all carrying some food. Remember, they talked about that in that Hound Hour episode.
Yeah, so they need just tie.
But it's already soaked, so it doesn't matter.
Just get your backpack off, idiot.
Maybe this is why they're out of food half the time. Anyway, they all decide to just hang out all day in the hot springs area because it's so nice and relaxing and they were so hot. And for some reason, the hot springs is a nice, comfortable place to hang out after being hot. So they all let their Pokemon out to play. Ash and Brock play with a Master Ball Beach Ball with their Pokemon. But then Psyduck has an accident that leads to Totodile smacking the ball right into Cyndaquil's face, and then the ball goes flying up and out of the area. Chikorita, Cyndaquil, and Totodile are all mad at each other, and Ash thinks they're just playing and having fun. Misty questions him on that, and so Ash sends those three to work together to go find the beach ball to prove that he was right, which he's not. But that never gets, like, proven, really, because they're gone. Chikorita finds an Apom with the ball, and gets ready to drive the Apom away, but Totodile cuts in, and the Apom dodges, leaving Totodile to crash into a tree, which knocks a bunch more Apom out of it, and they all get angry, and throw sand at the trio, burying Totodile, who has to break out and catch up later. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is trudging along and looking for the hidden springs. They are enjoying a lot of fresh fruit, which they're carrying in baskets. And then a ton of Apom rush by and run over Team Rocket. Soon after, Ash's Johto starter trio runs by and over Team Rocket, chasing the Apom. Team Rocket recognizes the trio of Pokemon and decide to find the spring still because then they'll find the twerps. So they chase after the trio and the Apom. The Apom, with the ball, rolls into a cave, and Totodile and Chikorita are annoyed with one another as they go in, because they're, like, hitting each other back and forth. But then Chikorita leaves and pushes Cyndaquil in, who seems to be afraid to go in. Like, because they were just rushed in, but Cyndaquil stayed behind. Like, I don't know if I want to go in there.
Yeah. Even though he's already been in a cave before.
Maybe that's why. There was a boulder that rolled around in there, and there was a kid trying to get him. Like, there was a lot of danger in that cave.
That's fair.
Maybe he has trauma. Team Rocket sees them go into the cave and get ready to follow, but then a large Snorlax shows up and picks up James by the basket he's carrying. He slips his arms out and is free, and Team Rocket flee into the cave, which Snorlax decides to sit and sleep by, blocking anybody from getting back out that way. There's a fork in the cave, and Totodile ends up actually separated from the other two starters, because he chose one path when they ended up choosing the other, because they had been behind him, I think is how that went. Anyway, they end up separate, because they go down different paths. So then Meowth, not paying attention to Team Rocket and where they go, he also ends up going down the same path that Totodile went down, which turns out to be a dead end. Meowth is going to catch Totodile with a net, but then the cave starts to shake, and we go into our Who's That Pokemon trivia! This Pokemon inflates its body like a balloon when it gets angry. No, it's not that one. Turns out Snorlax's movement is what is causing everything to shake. And then parts of the ceiling crash in, trapping everyone inside. Totodile saw a boulder about to crush Meowth, and he headbutted him out of the way, even though Meowth tried to capture him earlier. Cyndaquil and Chikorita panic for a bit, but then decide to try and find Totodile, and they do find him and Meowth, and help them get free of their location. The trio are much happier to be together. Meanwhile, Jesse and James bash their way out of a different area of the cave and find the hidden springs. But before they can hop in, a bunch of Apom, one of them floating on the beach ball, start throwing things at Team Rocket and not letting them into the water. Inside the cave, Chikorita feels wind blow her leaf, and so she leads them out of the cave, all of them working together to break open some blocked areas. The trio work together, tickling, biting, and burning, to get Snorlax to move out of the cave entrance. And so now Meowth decides to catch all three of them in a net, despite all their help. But then Snorlax shows up and wonders who burned him, and the trio all point at Meowth. And so Meowth has to run away, and Snorlax chases him, because even though it wasn't Meowth, it was 3-1.
Well, I mean, every time, like, they help Meowth, he always turns his back on us.
Yeah, not every time. James and Meowth chose not to help Jesse fight the twerps that one time.
That's fair.
So Meowth goes back into the cave, and Snorlax runs into the wall, which cracks it and shakes the area, causing the springs to flood out into a river of sorts that Snorlax ends up just relaxing on, and the Johto trio end up riding upon him. When Team Rocket is washed away, Jesse says,
I don't know about you, but I wasn't prepared for trouble.
And so we get another catching catchphrase. Working together, the trio escape their ordeal and reunite with Ash. And the beach ball floats on back to them. Meanwhile, Team Rocket are now with Snorlax in the water until Snorlax decides to swim against the current, and Team Rocket is drifting off again! No ding. And no flying up in the air. So this is a we're off again moment, and it's also an entertaining exit, just like the train ride. Because they left in a different way than blasting off. So, our Who's That Pokemon is Wigglytuff. See, I told you it wasn't Jigglypuff. So, our tally is catching catchphrase, 1. We're off again, 1. And entertaining exit, 1. And now to rank it. So I do enjoy it when the Pokemon get to go out and, like, work together with Team Rocket's Pokemon sometimes and just do their own thing and stuff without the gang. So this, I did enjoy that. But, I mean, there's nothing too spectacular about the episode overall. So I do think that it is probably under 2 hits and a miss, at least.
I thought it was pretty good, like, them working together and their friendship and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you think? Where do you think I should move it?
Oh, no, I would have just put it a little higher, but...
Yeah, well, I'm interested in your opinion.
Oh, no, I'd probably put it maybe just above 2 hits and a miss.
Okay, we can do that.
Now we're moving on to episode 107, or season 4, episode 11, Hook, Line, and Stinker, which is based off Hook, Line, and Sinker, or Azumao Fishungu Batoru, or Azumao Fishing Battle.
So apparently, relaxing at the hot springs wasn't enough. Now the gang is relaxing some more by a lake with their Pokemon. And we are about to launch into an episode that feels very, very familiar. Almost as if we'd just done an episode like this last time. While Poliwhirl is hanging out, a Poliwrath shows up and punches the Poliwhirl without any reason. Some obnoxious trainer with fishing gear shows up and is the owner of the Poliwrath, and he makes fun of Misty's wimpy Poliwhirl, and stupidly claims that she hasn't trained it well enough since it isn't evolved into a Poliwrath.
How they evolve?
Exactly. Training doesn't do that. Misty challenges the jerk to a duel after he insults the rest of her Pokemon too, but he says he has other plans. Those plans are apparently a bug-catching contest part 2. Only instead of bugs, it's a Sea King catching competition. They all get special balls again. Granted, the lake balls look really cool.
Yeah, they did look kind of cool.
But this time, though, it doesn't suggest that they get to keep the Pokemon they catch like they did with the bug-catching one. They never say that, and there's nothing in the episode that indicates that they do. But they still do only get to have one Pokemon with them to help, just like with the bug-catching one. Ash, of course, chooses Pikachu, which is actually a really good choice, because it's an electric type and their water type that they're going after.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Ash actually made a good choice.
Well, I mean, he makes that choice anyway, most of the time. And if he's not picking Pikachu, who's he usually picking? Chikorita or Bulbasaur, which would also be good choices. That's right. Granted, they might be a little less choice, because Goldeen / Sea King probably knows Peck.
Yep.
Anyway, Andreas, who's the jerk face, is there to enter as well. So that was obviously the important thing he had to do, which is why he couldn't battle. And when he enters, a lot of people start murmuring, because apparently he's known for being really good and winning these kind of competitions. So Misty isn't going to have that, and is going to enter with her Poliwhirl, so she can beat that creep. And then Brock says he is choosing the registration lady as his partner.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of freaks her out. She's like, what? Right.
And Misty shows up to babysit Brock again and pulls him away by his ear. Another difference in this contest is that it doesn't seem to be age-restricted, since Team Rocket, in casual-looking summer clothes, are out trying to win the competition as well.
They're there for, like, the chocolate bars.
Yes, they want the year's supply of chocolate, which is the prize for this contest. Jesse and James get tired of catching nothing for an hour, and so Jesse tosses Meowth into the water as a lure. Then Misty's line catches Meowth, and so both Jesse and Misty tug on Meowth and against one another, thinking they must have found a big one. This causes their boats to slam into one another, and the gang, of course, do not recognize Team Rocket again. Despite this not even being a real disguise, they're just in casual clothes.
Yeah.
And then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This beetle-like Pokemon has long been extinct.
Has it though?
Right? When we come back, we have a boat race with Misty and the Punk, and the result is Team Rocket getting capsized. Then Ash gets a Sea King, and then Andreas gets a bigger Sea King, and there is only 10 minutes left. But then Misty uses a special lure that looks like her again, just like she used in the Totodile episode, but this was supposed to be some new version of it, and manages to pull up a Sea King and catch it! Then, at the measuring of Sea King, it turns out that Andreas and Misty tied. So, to settle the tie, they have to have a Pokemon battle.
So he has to battle her anyway.
1v1. We all knew where this was headed. Poliwhirl versus Poliwrath. This definitely differs from how the bug-catching contest finished, but this does invoke another old episode, which is the Pikachu-Raichu electric gym battle. Because you have a Pokemon that's evolved with a stone, and a Pokemon that's lesser evolved going head-to-head. So it kind of reminded me of that. What happens during the match is Team Rocket arrive to steal the chocolate and start off with an interesting intro.
Don't you worry, things are dandy.
We just want that first prize candy. And then Wobbuffet shows up at the end for another irritating interruption. They don't take long to beat up Team Rocket. Then they go blasting off.
They're pretty strong.
I don't even know if they go blasting off again. I don't remember what they said because I didn't even write it down. You know, this is This is like back to season. This is their first season. I don't remember how Team Rocket left this time. I can picture them coming down over the battle, but I don't remember exactly how they lose. I think Misty takes care of most of it. I don't know.
They lose and don't get no candy.
Yep. And we'll just assume they blast it off again. But then we have a Psyduck sighting as he pops out along with Staryu and Goldeen to encourage Poliwhirl, who is now lacking some self-confidence in this battle that he has to go up with against Poliwrath. And it works, so Poliwhirl pulls through and wins. Andreas suddenly has growth, I guess, and apologizes, but it feels really tacked on at the end.
Mm-hmm, like, oh, I lost, better apologize and look good.
Yeah. Misty is sending all the chocolate she won to her sisters, Brock's family, Oak, and keeping some for Togepi.
See, that's what doesn't make sense. It's a year's supply, so she should be able to have as much as she wants all year long.
Well, that's not exactly how year supply things usually work. When you win a year supply of something, it means you have enough for a year. And who's that Pokemon? It's Kabuto! Which we have seen plenty of and know they're not actually extinct.
Yeah, that's just silly.
Now for our tally. We have babysitting Brock. We have two Psyduck sightings. I didn't mention the other one. I forgot. When they're on the boat talking to Andreas before they go out to go fishing, and he makes fun of Misty, he pops out and ends up in the water, freaking out, and so he makes fun of her for having a Psyduck that can't swim.
Bad time for Psyduck to pop out.
We had an interesting intro. We had an irritating interruption with Wobbuffet. Now to rank it.
Okay. I didn't like that little jerk guy. He was annoying.
Yep. And it was, again, a copy of bug catching contest.
So, not very high. Maybe just above a Dairy Tail landing?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
It was just like the same episode, pretty much. Except now Misty was the star of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, episode 171, or season 4, episode 12, Beauty and the Breeder. Or Sayonara Rokan, Pokemon Beauty Contesto. Or Goodbye Rokan, Pokemon Beauty Contest.
Rokan. It's Vulpix's name. And you know what that... How I like it really clicks in my head, besides knowing the episode?
How?
What is the number for six? Or what is the word for six?
Roku?
Which is the first part of Rokan. Oh. And how many tails does a Vulpix have? What did we learn from our Pokedex entries?
Seven.
Six. Anyway, the gang is taking a break, because they didn't just have two episodes breaks.
Oh my gosh, they're breaks. They're like my siblings.
Anyway, they take a break at a Pokemon Center, and Brock is at the computer checking his email, which is apparently something he's been doing a lot, based on the conversation Ash and Misty have. We've just never seen him do it. Brock is excited because he finally got a message from Susie! Who's Susie? That was my first reaction when I heard that. Like, Susie? Who the heck is that? I'm sure it's somebody we met before, but I don't know.
I was pretty sure it was one of the girls that we had met before.
Which is a ton, so who? Well, they let us know pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Because, and I can't blame anyone for forgetting who Susie is, because this is the girl from back in the first season who gave Brock the Vulpix.
First season, wow. So I was pretty sure where Vulpix was going this episode.
Yeah, the title Goodbye Rokan doesn't help either.
Yeah, but
granted,
like
we didn't have that
English
title.
I knew what was happening.
And this episode has a lot of glammed up Pokemon again, just like the other episode that had Susie in it.
It was a really funny one. I think it was like a Machoke or something with a huge lipstick.
There was a lot of funny ones.
Mm-hmm.
Including
like a hippie victory bell.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. But yeah, they're dealing with a beauty competition in this one. And we have more arguments about whether the inside or outside counts more, just like we did in the previous Susie episode. So there's a lot of parallels between that episode and this one. But this also means we've got a Rokan reunion. Or should I say, Rokan reunion.
A seven reunion? Wait, what's the name of Vulpix? Rokan. So like a Vulpix reunion.
The joke is Rokan sounds like Rokan. Rokan reunion, Rokan reunion. And Vulpix does reunite, so.
I suppose.
The town with the contest that Susie is headed to is a little out of their way, but Brock just needs to see Susie! So they detour from their trip to Ecruteak and head to this other town that doesn't exist. in the games. Ash assumes the contest is another Pokemon catching contest like the bug catching and the Sea King ones. Now, that ups the last episode just a bit, because since we've had two, it makes sense that he could almost assume that there's a third type of contest like that. Now, thinking that it's all about Pokemon catching, that does seem like it might be Ash, one-track Ash stuff.
That's what I was just thinking it could be, because it's all about Pokemon, but he's
all about catching Pokemon.
Yeah.
That's usually what he's thinking about. Like, he's thinking about Pokemon and catching them. Those are the things.
Or battles.
Which, this falls into those categories. Not the actual contest doesn't, but his thoughts do.
I think it should
count. All right. Yes. Jesse and James are thrilled to be there since they love working with appearances and beauty, which is really what they should do. Because remember, also in that last Susie episode, they were having a ball and being successful at their business of beautifying Pokemon. That is what they should be doing with their lives. that's their calling.
Yeah.
Even if Arbok and Weezing or Ekans and Koffing looked really bizarre in their outfits back then. All right.
Because they even made Misty happy.
Yes, at first. They went a little overboard. But Meowth is the one that ruined everything last time. So Brock and Ash are led to Susie by Vulpix. Brock is super nervous as he gives Susie some flowers. And as we've discussed, especially with the Japanese title giving it away, how this interaction goes, it seems very clear that we were headed to a gotta-give-em-up moment here.
Oh yeah, I guess it counts if one of the party goes.
Yep. Oh, we count Team Rocket, too.
I could see that.
We did that already with the Lickitung.
Oh yeah, gotta give up Lickitung. I like Lickitung, but I think Wobbuffet more.
Wobbuffet's a good replacement for sure. And the interactions between him and Jesse have been a ball.
And I think Wobbuffet stays around actually for a really long time.
Then, because Brock did such a good job raising Vulpix during this time apart, Susie suggests that they enter the contest with Vulpix together. So Brock faints in his excitement. Meanwhile, Misty is enamored over a Ninetales and asks 1,000 questions, and the jerk there, taking care of the Ninetales, is super annoyed and says, "Hey, leave me alone, stop asking so many questions." But then Susie shows up and tells this guy, whose name is Zane, to not be like that, because it turns out Susie and Zane know each other, making Brock nervous, until he hears that Zane is the representation in this episode for the outside beauty counting, and therefore Susie's bitter rival, according to Brock. He really tries to punch that idea through.
To everyone, all the time.
Yep.
Because he loves Susie.
It doesn't, but the idea doesn't take, because Susie and Zane are pretty friendly and they grew up together and everything, so they aren't bitter. Back to Team Rocket, we find that they have put makeup on Meowth that makes him look a lot like Ziggy Stardust. Team Rocket's plan this time around is not even evil. They're just going to enter the contest with Meowth, because they just want recognition to become famous, and then millionaires doing beauty stuff, which really is what they should be doing.
Yep.
However, they do make some mistakes.
Yeah.
Like they always do. So, as the contest is about to begin, we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. These Pokemon collect spherical objects for a festival. I'm so glad we referenced that episode.
Because it's amazing. You know what? I should have masterballed it.
Oh, jeez. You didn't even think it deserved that much, because you even, didn't use the full use of the ball you did use on it. Then the first contestant is supposed to go out, but Team Rocket stops him and his Merrill and take his place, which is the big mistake that they had. And then they show up in a spectacle with a modified motto. They changed it all.
Sorry we're late, it takes a while.
To give our Pokemon flair and style.
We hope our Pokemon will amaze all of you.
We're giving each one a look that's brand new.
We're creating a trend, and it's going to be big.
And this doesn't even look like a wig.
We two aren't fakers.
We're style makers.
We're cutting and curling at the speed of light.
Put yourself in our hands, and we'll make you look right. Then Wobbuffet does chime in, and Meowth just says, "Meowth, Meowth, Meowth," after that, without a fight, as he poses as a regular Meowth, because they did not introduce their names during the modified motto, because they aren't introducing that they're Team Rocket. And therefore, he wasn't interrupted, because Meowth was trying not to give away his stuff. Zane is impressed, and even Brock thinks that maybe Onyx could use a makeover. So that just shows how good they are. Like, this, even they are like, oh, these guys are great. But then Team Rocket's dreams are shattered as Officer Jenny shows up and says that they are frauds and had locked up the real number one contestant. It turns out Team Rocket didn't need to do this. They were entered, but apparently number 200 and something, and they couldn't let the judges wait that long to see who would actually be the winners, was their reasoning. And they probably would have been the winners at this rate. Everybody was in awe of them. They should have just waited till later. Although then we would have, if they did, we would have lost Team Rocket. Because they would have become famous makeup artists and stuff and just left Team Rocket and done their millionaire thing and not chase Pikachu anymore.
But somehow I'm always rooting for them to go good.
Right? So Jenny tosses them off the stage and they are disqualified. Team Rocket returns as Pokemon doctors to do examinations on all the contestant Pokemon. So they manage to load up all of those Pokemon into a shipping container. Then, when everyone breaks down the door to follow, because they were like, this seems a little fishy, Team Rocket is lifting the container off the ground with their balloon. And they take off their doctor costumes and reveal they were the contestants that were kicked out. And then they take off those costumes and reveal that they're Team Rockets.
Yeah, they had costumes on top of costumes, which are on top of their normal.
They're like, haha, we're those people. They're like, oh, it's those contestants that got disqualified. And then the more, oh, it's Team Rocket.
Yeah, that was fun.
I was amused by it. Noctowl is sent up to pop the balloon, and Team Rocket crash back down. Then we get a Pokemon battle, which gives us a distracted Pokemon as Victory Bell tries to eat James. Then Ninetales and Vulpix show up for the fight. And after a combined fire attack, Team Rocket is blasting off again! Ding! Brock sees how well Zane and Susie work together, and so he decides to encourage them in starting their own business together. But Brock still gets to finish the contest with Susie and Vulpix, and we do not get to learn who actually wins because the show was just mean that way.
And our Who's That Pokemon is the second best Pokemon in the world, Quagsire.
Why do you like Quagsire so much?
I don't know, they're funny. But so are Heracross, so. Oh, no, it's not the second best.
I was thinking, you have Eevee, four? Glaceon, Vaporeon. You have Wobbuffet, Heracross,
Psyduck.
Oh, yeah, Psyduck. Can't forget Psyduck.
Quagsire, you're after all the really, really good ones. Oh, and so our tallies for this episode is a Rockin' Reunion, 1, Susie. One Track, Ash, 1, thinking the beauty contest was a Pokemon catching contest. Gotta Give Him Up, 1, Vulpix is returned to Susie. Modified Motto, which we read for you. And Distracted Pokemon, Victory Bell Eats James. Now let's rank it!
Alright, so Beauty and the Breeder. I love a Rockin' Reunion. The episode was actually kind of fun, and I really like to see James and Jesse thrive, even if it ends up falling on its face.
Yeah.
So it's definitely better than Hook, Lag, and Stinker, for sure. Again, I wasn't that big into Fossil Fools, so it's definitely better than that. I think it's better than Two Hits and a Miss, probably. You did kind of win me over with the whole hot water battle, like the Pokemon teaming up thing. So I think it might be between Two Hits and Hot Water.
Sounds like a good spot. Now let's move on to episode 172, or season 4, episode 13, A Better Pill to Swallow, or Subo Subo, Tai Madatsubomi, or Tsubotsubo versus Madatsubomi with 0 exclamation points. Come on, people.
Ash has a stomach ache from eating 5 hamburgers, and the gang doesn't have any more medicine for him because he's had a habit of eating too much. But then a weird little old man shows up with some special medicine that works for Pokemon and people. Ash is cured, and now he's hungry again. The little old man is called Old Man Shuckle. Brock makes a mistake in the name and calls him Old Man Chuckle. This was particularly amusing to me because why?
Shuckle Chuckle.
Because you named your Shuckle Chuckle.
Glitter that I know it had an effect on the whole universe.
Right? So Old Man Shuckle explains that he makes all his own medicine and takes them back to his cabin and shows all the Shuckle he has. He shows them how he pours stuff inside each one, plugs them up, and then after a year, like he puts like corks in their little holes in their shell. Mm-hmm. And after a year or something, they are ready to go. But the Shuckle have to live out in the wild, which then means hunting them back down. And he has a very special medicine that helps to tame Pokemon, but to make it, he has to store it in a special shuckle. One that is a purple or blue color, or, you know.
Shiny!
Shiny! So we have our second shiny Pokemon. The Pokedex does mention that the shuckle are shy, and are most often found underneath rocks. Which I thought was cool, because that's how we find, at least found the shuckle that I got, is underneath a rock, with Rock Smash.
That is kind of fun, actually.
And I'm going to guess that's how we always find them. There might be another way, I don't know, but that's the only way we've found them so far, and only the one. Old Man Shuckle has a Pokemon named Spoopy, and this Pokemon was an awesome little Bellsprout. I loved Spoopy.
Yeah, Spoopy was so much fun.
I decided the next time I get a Bellsprout, its name is Spoopy. So probably in Sapphire.
I like it.
All right. And this Pokemon, Spoopy, can smell out the shuckle and is able to tell which ones are actually done making the juice. Team Rocket listened in on this conversation and, of course, want the special juice from the shiny shuckle so that they can be master of the Pokemon universe, because they'll all be tamed to them. Mm. Back to the gang, they chase after the very speedy Spoopy to find the shuckle and gather them up for the old man. While they're having trouble keeping up and catching the shuckle that Spoopy tosses, we get interrupted with some Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon is the most unique Pokemon of all. That's your clue. Back to the show.
Oh, and I want to make a note. Brock wants the special juice so he can tame all the Pokemon and impress girls.
Of course. I forgot about that, but that makes sense. Spoopy finds the shiny shuckle and has a conversation with it. And then, from in a tree, we get an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, the secret is out.
And make it double. Trouble's what we're about.
The secret wouldn't be out if you would just shut up.
And then Wobbuffet gets in the way of Meowth's line again in an irritating interruption where Meowth tells him to stop trying to steal his lines. And Wobbuffet comes back in and steals the spotlight anyway. Team Rocket gets the shiny shuckle and manages to escape after a wheezing smokescreen.
Which I just want to point out, technically, they're just being mean, but they're not breaking any law or anything. Because, like you said, a wild shuckle is what it takes to make the juice. So he is wild. He is up for grabs. Anyone can catch him.
That is a very fair bit of information, for sure. After running, Team Rocket is thirsty, and so they decide to drink the shuckle juice and are pretty creepy when they force Meowth to drink some first, because in case it's, you know, dangerous. And they get these, like, the menacing looks on them and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Then, when Spoopy loses the trail of the shiny shuckle, they see all the shuckle coming out despite being shy, and they all wander off in the same direction. Old Man Shuckle shows up and explains that someone must have consumed the juice that hasn't been properly prepared yet, because it's just supposed to get prepared inside the thing, and then he, like, that gets it ready for him to make the stuff, but it's all still very potent now instead. Then, back with Team Rocket, they are feeling all warm and fuzzy, and Meowth is in love with James. Old Man Shuckle explains to the gang as they all follow the shuckle that drinking the juice, undiluted, causes the drinker to exude a pheromone that attracts all the Pokemon to them. Then all the shuckle show up by Team Rocket with hearts in their eyes and giving a weird wave as they close in, because they have like little tentacle-y leg things, and so they like wave very like wiggly and almost eerily. Team Rocket flees, which then causes them to cross paths with Ash and Co. Team Rocket sends out their Pokemon, and Ash gets ready to send out Pikachu, but Team Rocket's Pokemon that were sent out are in love with Jesse and James, which means we have three distracted Pokemon that were sent out. Arbok, Wobbuffet, and Victory Bell, which still eats James. So James concedes that Ash and Co. win, and so he should just blast them off already with a catching catchphrase. It's like, we lose, just blast us off already. Mm-hmm. So then Ash tells Pikachu to Thunderbolt Team Rocket, but he doesn't. For which, he, too, is a distracted Pokemon and in love.
Which I actually thought was good, because I was like, what about Pikachu? He's a Pokemon, right?
Yeah, I was actually going to be kind of annoyed with that myself, but yeah, it all worked out.
Well, not for Ash.
Well, no, but I mean, for the show was consistent. And so then he cuddles up with Jessie, which does not bother Jessie at all. She's like, sweet, I don't have to do anything, and now I have this cuddly little Pikachu. So then Old Man Shuckle throws out a bunch of dust that neutralizes the pheromones and fixes all the Pokemon.
Because otherwise it would last like 3 days.
It did not. Well, yeah. But it still will, because it did not fix Team Rocket. It just neutralized what was affecting the Pokemon there, as we will see. Because the shiny Shuckle in Jessie's arms sticks its head out and licks her belly, causing her to freak out and throw the Shuckle into the air. Spoopy catches the Shuckle, and Pikachu is no longer in love with Jessie, and he looks very angry. And it was a funny face to me. I'm like, oops, I think there was a mistake made. Then he jumps up into the air, and while still flipping through, he shocks Team Rocket, and they go blasting off again! Ding! And I think James had a secret swear word in there again when Jessie says, there they go again, and he says, no Shuckle. James has been secretly swearing a lot lately. And then Meowth says, and no Shuckle juice either. Which helps conceal James's comment a little bit more. Because he's like, no Shuckle. And then he's like, no Shuckle juice either. Because you could just take it as, well, and they're blasting off with no Shuckle. Because that's what Meowth chimes in. Because he doesn't get it. Of what James is saying. Then the gang say goodbye to Old Man Shuckle and continue on their journey. Oh, and at the end, we see Team Rocket is hiding in a tree with a bunch of Ursaring and Beedrill surrounding them and in love because the stuff doesn't wear off for them for 3 days and nights. Good luck when it does, Team Rocket.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. All right, our Who's That Pokemon? It's Eevee!
Yes! Boy? The best.
Yeah. All right, our tallies are shiny, a shiny Shuckle. Interesting intro, which we read for you. Irritating interruption, Wobbuffet and Meowth. Distracted Pokemon, 4. All 3 Pokemon, Team Rockets and Zoud, are distracted. And then Pikachu is distracted as well. Alright, catching catchphrase, blast us off already then. Now it's time to rate the episode. I thought this one was kind of funny with Team Rocket. I don't know. I thought it was a good episode, but it wasn't, like, super cool.
I really like the consistency in having Pikachu even get distracted or, like, in love, and so then he just cuddles up, and then his like, reaction after that was awesome. I love that we have another shiny Pokemon, and I loved Spoopy.
Yeah,
Spoopy. So all of those things helped, like, elevate
Spoopy
the episode for
so
me.
So funny. If I didn't like Bellsprout, I think I might still like Spoopy. He was so funny.
Yeah, I was so happy when we watched it, because by this point, you had started to warm up to Bellsprout and not, like, hate him anymore. And I'm like, I'm glad that you did that before we got to this episode, because it's great. But I also was sad, because then I couldn't torture you with it.
Can't torture me no more.
Well, there's Spearow still. All right, where are you putting it?
I think this probably goes above, maybe even above... Yeah, maybe. Maybe even above typecasting.
Above the Sudowoodo one?
Mm-hmm.
I'm down with that.
Okay. Episode 173, or Season 4, Episode 14, Power Play. Or Buraki Yamio no Tatakai. Or Blacky, Battle During a Dark Night. 3 exclamation points.
Yep. And this is an unfortunate Japanese name, I feel like. Umbreon is so much cooler than Blacky. Yeah, that's right. We have an evolution in this episode. It's Umbreon.
Oh, this episode. It's kind of cool.
All right. So, the gang is walking along a mountain path, and then they hear some kid with a British accent named Alex Davis. But he says he's from Cherry Grove City, which we've been to before. We've seen people there. We've heard them. They did not have British accents. So, what? So, I decided to look it up. The actor's name? Alex Davis. He won a contest or something that allowed him to voice the character and have it named after him in the English dub, at least. So, that's why we got that. And he has a few lines, because he has a whole battle. So the gang peers over the cliff to see Alex Davis and his Alakazam in a trainer battle with...
Gary,
our recurring rival. We haven't seen him since the forest with the Hoot Hoot. That was a long time ago. It was like episode 4 or something of the last season. And what does he have? Well, this is where we get Umbreon! Because he had the Eevee in their battle way back. Now he's apparently evolved it into Umbreon. And it's cool. And it's also cool because it's a dark-type Pokemon battling a psychic-type Pokemon, and there's a point where Alakazam even uses a psychic move, and it doesn't really do anything to Umbreon because he's a dark-type, and it's so much fun. And the battle is actually really cool, too, just like the way it takes place and the way they're commanding. Like, it's just, it's a fun battle to watch.
Yeah.
But in the end, Gary wins, and Brock and Misty are impressed. Ash decides that he and Pikachu can beat him, and so he slides down the cliff to challenge Gary. But Gary says no, because he's already learned all of Pikachu's attack patterns, so it would be a waste of both their time. Ash then sends out Chikorita, Totodile, Cyndaquil, and Noctowl, and claims he could beat Gary and his Umbreon with any of those Pokemon. Chikorita cuddles Ash, Cyndaquil wanders off, and Noctowl is sleeping. Totodile is just dancing in front of Ash, but that's what he does when he's ready to go to battle as well. So I don't know if his actions necessarily count for a distracted Pokemon. So do we have 3 or 4 distracted Pokemon? Because Totodile was dancing, but like I said, he just does he does that anyway.
Yeah, he doesn't look distracted because he is like, or he does look distracted, and he does look distracted to Gary. But he's not distracted because he's listening to Ash, so it's enough to distract.
Okay, so we have 3 distracted Pokemon in that moment. Gary just walks away, doesn't even respond. He just keeps going.
I thought he was a turd.
I think Gary knows how to push Ash's buttons, because this would annoy Ash even more than any argument. Mm-hmm. And Gary just doesn't have the time for it. Because I agree, not with these Pokemon, but I can see why he didn't want to battle Pikachu. They've already done it. He's like, I'm not going to learn anything from this, and I'm going to beat you. So you're not going to learn anything either. Mm-hmm. And Ash was kind of a punk the last time they battled. Like, we all rooted for Gary when we watched it.
Yeah.
But Gary does seem to like he's doing really well, and he's not super obnoxious here. Like, yeah, it's annoying to Ash, and he does just walk away and doesn't give him the time of day. But overall, he's not being his normal, Ash, you're stupid. You smell you later.
Yeah.
So then in town, Brock and Misty are still talking about how cool Umbreon is, and it's really lifting Ash's spirits. Not really. He's actually pretty grumpy about it all. And Ash and them enter the Pokemon Center, and Team Rocket is spying on them. Team Rocket contemplates stealing food from the center because they're hungry. Meowth gets annoyed with Wobbuffet, and he ends up getting hurt thanks to a counterattack from Wobbuffet because he tries to scratch him. Jesse and James talk about how that move is hard to beat, and it gives Jesse an idea. Ash is stuffing his face to build up his strength to face off against Gary when suddenly the lights in the center go out.
I wonder who.
Right? So with this blackout all around town, Nurse Joy can't get anyone to answer at the power plant with a phone call, which I don't know how that was working since the power's out. Anyway, no wonder they're not answering. You're not actually calling. The gang decide to go up to the power plant to investigate. Meanwhile, Gary is having a campfire outside of the town with his Umbreon. But they both notice all the lights are off in town, which seems weird. And then they see Ash and them pass by, which of course piques Gary's curiosity. Then we cut to the power plant, where all the workers are tied up and a cord runs off from the plant to a large Wobbuffet robot as we encounter Team Rocket's latest busted bot.
And I knew as soon as it started that the cord was going to be the downfall.
Except that it's not exactly. I mean, it's part of the downfall, but it's more than that. Like, there's more to it after that.
That's fair. But, usually it is the thing that stops it or, that slips it up. And
that usually leads to, the end real quick, but it doesn't here, which is more interesting.
That's fair.
So, of course, they're planning to steal Pikachu and other Pokemon from the Poke Center, but then they see Ash and company running toward the power plant, so they don't need to go down to the Poke Center to get Pikachu. And then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon teases its opponents by spitting in their eyes. Back to the show, Ash and company find the tied-up workers and go to free them, but the Wobbuffet bot gets in their way, and Team Rocket unleash an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, we've got a new toy.
And make it double. It's awesome. Oh boy. Not the strongest rhyming game. Then they explain they needed the power plant to power up their bot. Pikachu tries to zap the mech, but it's turned against them with the counterattack special thing that it does.
Because it absorbs it and sends it back 10 times.
Well, it doesn't even, like, absorb it exactly. It opens up this door, lets the attack in through the door, which then gets, like, rerouted inside this with this device and then shot back out. But, yeah.
Basically absorbs it.
Yeah, but, like, a lot of times when it absorbs it, it just shows the whole thing get shocked and then it's just like, oh, you charged this up. Nice, thanks. That's fair. So that's why I gave the detailed version. So then they try a bunch of water attacks at once, which are also shot back as well. And each time the gang run away, and eventually the mech's cord reaches its limit and can't keep following, and so they can't land their next attack. which makes me wonder how they ever thought they were going to make it to the Boca Center. It's just not long enough.
That's fair.
While the extension cord is pulled tight, Umbreon shows up and shatters the cord on the mech side. Yep, and that's it. And they're blasting off again! Just kidding. That doesn't happen yet. This unplugs the bot and causes it to freeze up. James is ready to quit, but Jesse has an idea to fix the problem. Meanwhile, Ash and Co., along with Gary, end up freeing the workers. They hear that the water gate needs to be opened to get power going again sooner rather than later. So Gary rushes off to work on that, and Ash goes to follow. But the mech is back, now being powered by James and Meowth using cycling power!
I had a small hunch that was where it was going.
And of course, Jesse does not have to do it. The mech gets off a few punches and goes for a kick, but then freezes again because, well, James and Meowth are exhausted. So Ash uses the opportunity to have Pikachu thunderbolt it. This does shock Team Rocket, they're all electrified, but it also recharges the batteries in the mech. Oops. See, this is great, because, like, the power cord, yes, it stopped it, but then it showed up again, blocked them, because they had a new power source of cycling, which also then ran out, but then it got charged up again because of Pikachu. It was, it just wasn't the end with the cord, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
And it was so much fun, much more interesting, because you keep thinking they're out, but they just come right back.
Isn't there a song, you knock me down, I get back up again?
I get knocked down, but I get up again, you're never gonna keep me down. Yeah. So then Ash has Cyndaquil and Chikorita go in, and Cyndaquil has its flames sucked into that opening for the counterattack. But Ash planned on that part, and so then he has Chikorita vine whip around the robot, sealing the doors from opening again, because they don't slide open, they pop open, so they can't open. And so when they go to unleash the double-powered, you know, flamethrower or whatever it was.
Like, times 10.
Yep. It causes the explosion to happen inside instead. And so Team Rocket is blasting off again. Ding! Ash catches up to Gary, but they find that the way to open the water gate is missing its handle. They find that it's in a lock check, and Ash uses, like, Cyndaquil or something to break open the door. Umbreon comes inside and lights up the place with its, like, cool yellow circle things, which was really nifty. Mm-hmm. And then Ash uses all three of the Johto Pokemon to free the handle from its chain. Like they burn it and cool it, and then Chikorita razor leaves it to break the chain or something like that.
And you make it cool.
Which, I mean, they just did it so they could use all of them, but if they did the cool and the heating and cooling, then he probably could have just pulled it off. So then they get the lever out there, and it's really hard to pull and, like, twist or whatever it is that they need to do with this thing to open the gate. So they all work together, and Gary and Umbreon end up joining in, and then they're able to all do it and get it open, and the water flowing, the lights turn back on in town, and Gary tells Ash that he has improved, like Ash has improved, and says that Ash shouldn't be too surprised that the next time they meet, it might be Gary challenging Ash to a match instead. Which is quite the compliment to Ash from Gary, because Ash is always trying to battle.
Ash is always trying to battle anyone.
True. At the end, Joy is thanking the gang, and Brock tries to leverage that thanks into contact information, like a phone number and stuff. And Misty saves Joy by babysitting Brock and yanking him away by his ear.
And our who's that Pokemon? It's Shellder!
So apparently Shellder spit in your face to taunt you.
Okay, and our tallies are recurring rival. I wonder who that was.
Hmm.
Oh, it was Gary! Yep. Okay, and our distracted Pokemon was 3, because Chikorita and Cyndaquil were distracted and Noctowl, but Totodile was just ready for battle.
Well, he was ready to dance, which he always is.
Yeah. And then Busted Bot, Wobba Fett Mech. Interesting Intro, which we read for you. Eeveelutions.
Our new category that we're bringing into this, because we just love Eevee so much, we might as well count Eeveelutions when we see them.
Might as well. They're so cool.
Right? Yeah, so if we see an Eevee, Eeveelution, doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be an Eeveelution specifically. It can just be an Eevee as well.
But what if Ash catches an Eevee or Eeveelution?
Oh, if he gets one, we might have to readjust that. But he doesn't, so far at least, so okay. I think we'll count him for now. We'll if he gets one, we'll retire it, if he's using it on a regular. Yeah. If he catches one and it's back at home with, like, Oak again, like Heracross.
Or if he uses it so little, like...
Exactly. Then we'll still count it.
Yeah. Okay. And then Babysitting Brock. Misty pulls Brock away from Joy. Now to rank it.
All right. This was a cool one to end on, I felt like. I was really happy to see Gary. I was really happy to see Umbreon. I really liked the battle between Umbreon and Alakazam. That was really cool. I really enjoyed Gary's personality in this one. He wasn't, like, super annoying. And Ash and him actually, like, Ash was being Ash to a degree, but he wasn't, like, heightened annoyance like he was in their battle at the end of Orange Island. And the whole mech thing not being destroyed right away and, like, kept coming back with different, like, they were using all the things to get it to go, and that was really fun for me.
Yeah.
So, a lot about this was really enjoyable to me. So I think I want to put this one. This one's going to be a little tricky. I think I almost want to put it above the bug stops here. So just under Goldenrod.
I think we could do that.
Maybe it's even better than Goldenrod.
I could definitely see it as our new number one.
You good with new number one?
Sure.
All right, I'm good with a new number one. Yeah, let's put it in new number one. It wasn't necessarily all the super funny stuff that we get sometimes, but it was really just a good episode.
Okay, so after all of that, our top five are Hassle in the Castle, Airtime, The Bug Stops Here, A Goldenrod Opportunity, and Power Play.
As I said before, we will start posting the rankings, so if you want the full list, just check our Facebook group, Routes to Pokemon, and we will also have an updated list of the tallies, so if you want to see where we're at on all of those.
All right, now it's time to award a Pokeball for who we think was the most featured or coolest Pokemon this episode.
I have a feeling we might agree on this one again.
I have a hunch too. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Umbreon.
It's an Eeveelution. Come on, guys.
So far, we've been in agreement every chunk.
I mean, I feel like they've all been obvious.
Well, Miltank was pretty obvious.
Sudowoodo was a little. We could have disagreed, but
we could have. I had a pulling on a little bit of it, but yeah, Sudowoodo definitely did seem. Yeah.
It took me like 3 seconds of thinking. I had to go through a couple options.
But yeah, Umbreon, so cool.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, the only other ones that were really won this time around, I feel like, is... I mean, like, Hitmontop was featured, but whatever. I feel like it would have been, like, one of the Johto trio, because they did do a decent amount in a couple of episodes. So, like, they did a lot. So I could see one of them earning it, but I'm just... It's Umbreon.
Maybe Wobba Fett with the whole Wobba Fett machine and stuff.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
But, yeah, Umbreon. Come on, people.
We love Umbreon, even though we still don't have him in our games.
Soon. So, after that, let's get into Pokemon cards!
Yeah! Alright, so who's going first this week?
I think it's your turn.
Alright, I am opening, well, we're both opening, Scarlet and Violet Surging Sparks from the new box that I got. And my package has Latias and Latios on it.
And mine has Exeggutor.
Yours is Terrestrialized, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's not, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're just regular. So my first card...
Is it an Eeveelution? I'll throw this at you if it's an Eeveelution.
Is not an Eeveelution. It is just Eevee!
That's fine. I've got this ready, though. I've got it ready.
She's threatening me with a roll of toilet paper.
It's got my boogers inside. My life.
Ooh, nummy.
You're disgusting.
All right, so yes, I got Eevee, boosted evolution ability. As long as this Pokemon is in the active spot, it can evolve during your first turn or the turn you play it. So if you play it later, but actually move it into the active position before your turn's end, you can evolve it right away.
That's kind of fun.
I like that. Its genetic code is irregular. It may mutate if it's exposed to radiation from element stones. No, really. All right. Get your leaf stones ready. My next one is a grass type. It is Execute.
Hey, I've got the Executor.
I know. Using telepathy, only fellow Execute can pick up on. They always form a cluster of six. Ooh. Cast form. Sunny form. Fire type. This is the form cast form takes on bright days. In an experiment where cast form was placed in front of a heater, it didn't change to this form. Mesprit. Psychic type. Known as the being of emotion. It taught humans the nobility of sorrow, pain, and joy. A trainer item card. Deduction kit. Look at the top three of your deck and put them back in any order, or shuffle them and put them on the bottom of your deck. I got a fire type, Cerulege.
Ooh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's a fire type. I mean, I know it has fire moves, like, but the Cerulege specifically is like the ghosty one or whatever, whereas Armor Rouge is the one that like keeps that fire thing going, I think. I mean, they start as Char Cadet, which is fire, but... An old set of armor steeped in grudges caused this Pokemon's evolution. Cerulege cuts its enemies to pieces without mercy. It's a cool picture on there, too. And then I have Indeedee, psychic type. Ability, Obliging Heal. When you play this Pokemon from your hand onto your bench during your turn, you may heal 30 damage from your active Pokemon and have it recover from a special condition. That's handy. Togepri!
Togepri!
It's a reverse holo. The shell seems to be filled with joy. It is said that it will share good luck when treated kindly.
I'm going to keep that in mind when we watch the show.
My other reverse holo is a Vibrava. Fighting type. Evolves from Trapinch. It generates ultrasonic waves by vigorously vibrating its wings. After making its prey faint, it dissolves the prey with its digestive juices.
Ew.
And then my rare card is the Tatsugiri EX.
Ooh, I think I know what Tatsugiri looks like.
Tatsugiri!
Yeah, same thing.
No! I mean, in your world it is, because you keep saying it wrong.
Oh yeah, it looks right. I knew what he looked like.
Yeah, it uses fire and water, and fire, water, and dark, actually. It uses three types for its second move.
Fancy that.
So yeah, that the second one is Cinnabar Lure. Look at the top 10 cards of your deck. You may put any number of Pokemon you find there onto your bench. Shuffle the other cards back into your deck. But you need those three different energies for it. Oh, it is a dragon type, sorry. Yeah, it's a dragon type, and it's a Terra Tatsugiri.
That's cool.
And then I have a metal energy card.
Okay. My first card is a Sigalith. It's a psychic type. Psychic power allows these Pokemon to fly. Some say they were the guardians of an ancient city. Others say they were the guardians emissaries. All right, then Duraludon, metal type. Its metal body is durable but retaining heat. It vents this heat from the slits in its tail. Sizzlipede, fire type. It stores flammable gas in its body and uses it to generate heat. The yellow sections on its belly get particularly hot. Yamask, psychic type. It wanders through ruins by night carrying a mask that's said to have been the face it had when it was still human. Magnazone. Stage 2 evolves from Magneton, which evolves from Magnetite. Lightning. Exposure to a special magnet field changed Magneton's molecular structure, turning it into Magnazone. Then I got Pokemon Tool Trainer, Technical Machine Fluorite.
A TM.
Ooh. Then a Quaquavolt.
Oh, the final evolution of Quaxly.
Mm-hmm. Which evolves from Quaxwell, water type.
Quaquaval?
Quaquaval. Yeah, that seems about right. Dancing in ways that evoke faraway places, this Pokemon mesmerizes all that sees it. Flourishes of its decorative water feathers slice into its foes.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Then my reverse holo, Zangoose, colorless. If it comes across a Sviper, its fur bristles and it assumes its battle pose. Its sharp claws are its best weapon. Another reverse holo. Item, Call Bell, trainer card. My rare is Togekiss, evolves from Togetic, psychic.
Hmm.
These Pokemon are never seen anywhere near conflict or turmoil. In recent times, they've hardly been seen at all.
Nice.
And for all my psychic Pokemon, a psychic energy.
Sweet. Very cool.
So that wraps up our episode this week. Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunter Field Institute production. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, and other podcasting platforms. We're also on YouTube at the Hunter Field Institute channel. So wherever you find us, please subscribe, like, rate, and review. So I'll go ahead and leave comments. Or you can reach out to us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. So remember, we will be taking the next 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's. But when we come back in January, we will be covering 7 episodes of the anime, which are Mountain Time, Village of Sonans, Imitation Confrontation, The Trouble with Snubble, Adiós Amigos, Wings and Things, and The Grass Route. And we will not be covering any manga. And so with that, we will catch you on the next route. Bye!
Sayonara!
Jean.
I'll find your hidden treasures, Meadow Evergreen. Just you wait. Think you can pull a nasty little prank on me and not have any consequences just because you're dead? Ha! I'll show you! The last word turned into a scream of surprise as Professor Thistle found his ankle hoisted into the air, causing the old man to dangle upside down. He was carried right out through his window, and he found himself sailing over the town below. One slip, and his strange night would be over rather abruptly. He looked up, or was it down, to see what was carrying him. Grinning widely, tongue hanging out, and giving off a cry that sounded like snickering, was a hunter.
Let me go! I don't want to be here!
And so the hunter did just that, and Professor Thistle screamed as he plummeted toward the town below. Suddenly, his direction changed, and the hunter laughed as it had grabbed hold of Thistle's ankle again.
That wasn't funny.
After nearly dying and with the cold air rushing by, it was hard for Thistle to speak. The hunter continued to grin and snicker, obviously disagreeing with the man. The hunter began to slow and fly closer to the ground. Then, without any warning, it let go of Thistle again. This time, when the professor tried to scream, it was cut off when his face and the rest of him fell into a large pile of snow. He thrashed around to get out and onto his feet, sputtering with a mouthful of snow. He started beating the snow off of himself as he marched over to where the hunter floated.
What is the meaning of this? Where are we?
The hunter ignored Professor Thistle and simply stared into a window where a warm light spilled out into the cold, snowy night. Thistle followed the Pokemon's gaze and saw a woman setting a table for dinner with some help from a Jinx.
Oh! That Pokemon isn't very common to come by. She has done well for herself. But I already have one myself, so I don't understand why you brought me here.
The woman looked off to the left, somewhere Thistle couldn't see from outside, and she seemed to be calling for someone. Out in the cold, it was impossible to hear. However, a moment later, Gray entered the room, an Apom riding on his shoulder. The two chatted as they took seats at the table, and Professor Thistle couldn't help but notice that there was a third place setting as the two began to eat.
Why three settings? Are they expecting a late guest?
The hunter turned and looked at Thistle.
What? Oh, seriously? I told Gray to forget about that and assured him I would not be there.
Hunter's eyes grew larger and it looked pointedly at Thistle, and then the ground where he stood. And then back at the house.
Well, I didn't plan to be here, and I'm not here of my own free will. You dragged me here!
The hunter snickered again, grabbed Thistle's wrist, and floated on through the window, bringing the professor along with him.
What? Wait! No! Once inside, the professor tried to explain to Gray and his mother the circumstances of his arrival. Sorry, this ghost Pokemon is pulling some sort of prank and dragged me here. It was not my intention to disrupt your meal. I will just be going now.
Told you he wouldn't show,
Gray's mother said.
I know, but, well, I really wanted him to.
The fact that the two continued their conversation and didn't even look at him, or the hunter, Professor Thistle realized that he needn't bother explaining any longer.
I still don't know why you try so hard, Gray. He has never accepted an invitation, and he has continually shown disdain for this holiday, and, well, for all people around him.
Mom, please, he's not as bad as you think. He keeps my extra Pokemon for me and has helped me become a better Pokemon trainer.
I don't think that's for your benefit, though. He keeps your Pokemon because it benefits him. And he can do more research. He's simply using you.
You're wrong, Mom.
Professor Thistle smiled. I always liked that kid. He's still young and needs to learn the truth about this harsh world. But he's a hard worker and has really gotten pretty good at finding and catching Pokemon.
I know he's not very nice. He's grumpy, harsh, and it almost has no generosity in his body.
Hey! I thought we had something here, you ungrateful little brat!
But, well, remember when we learned Dad wouldn't come back? Thistle took me under his wing. He helped me learn how to take care of myself, and even gave me my first Pokemon.
Something he has refused to do for any other child in town, mind you.
Gray's mother added.
He's neglected that particular duty to the detriment of many.
Which is why it's all the more important that he did it for me. I mean, yes, Bells was probably just an extra bell sprout he had and didn't have any need for, but even then, he doesn't usually give out Pokemon, as you said, so why did he do it for me?
Because the kid reminded me of, well, me. I lost my father early on, too, Thistle explained to the hunter.
Who knows why?
Gray's mother said.
Maybe he just felt bad for you.
Which means there is something there. He can't be all bad through and through.
The woman sighed and gave a small smile.
I suppose you're right, Gray. I just wish that side of him would show up more often. I also wish he would have shown up tonight so I could give him a piece of my mind. After all, you go out of your way for that man, and he doesn't even try to come to dinner.
Gray smirks.
Maybe he's scared of you, Mom.
As he well should be.
The woman laughed. The two happily began digging into their meal, and the scene drifted farther and farther away, and it was hardly even visible anymore by the time Thistle realized Hunter was flying him off again. Lost in thought, the professor didn't say anything as they traveled across town to another home. As they began to slow down, he finally spoke again, more to himself than anything. What was that about? Does everyone think I should just be handing out Pokemon to any child that asks? Even Gray seemed to agree with his mother in that regard. Am I so awful simply because I keep that which I work hard for and am more savvy than the fools around me? It was at that moment Professor Thistle dropped onto the hard ground in front of a humble little home. There was another pile of snow nearby. This one had a shovel sticking out of it. Ow! You missed the snow this time, you aggravating spirit! The hunter gave a pointed look, and Thistle seemed to be able to intuit exactly what the Pokemon was trying to say. You're right. I don't like being dropped into the snow. I don't like being dropped at all! The hunter lifted its hands in a shrug and floated on toward the small house. Hey, wait! You're just going to leave me out here? Professor Thistle was answered only with silence. Great, he grumbled. Now where have I been taken to? He looked around and could only note that there were a lot of repairs that needed doing on the house. The sort of thing certain Pokemon would be great at, so whoever lived there must not train their Pokemon very well. Such laziness! No pride in their home whatsoever! Then a young woman walked up to the building, bundled against the cold, and opened the door. Thistle, realizing the hunter was already inside, quickly ran through the doorway into the building before the door was shut.
Ruby!
A girl, that Thistle guessed to be about 7 or 8 based on her size, rushed forward and leapt into the young woman's arms.
What took you so long?
The young woman shook her head. Her mouth was covered by a scarf, and so any words she spoke were muffled to the point of incomprehension. She then helped the girl to the ground and began to free herself from the material that had shielded her from the outside environment. Professor Thistle was astonished to recognize the woman.
Miss Ratchet?
Of course, just as before, no one could see or hear the professor.
Sorry, Rosella,
the young woman said.
Professor Thistle had us all work late tonight.
Of course he did,
Rosella said. A very sour look came across her previously adorable face.
Probably to make up for not working tomorrow.
Yes, well, actually...
No, he's making you work on Christmas? That's not fair!
The woman sighed.
I know, Rosie, but hey, I don't have to go in until after lunch, so that's something.
Did he at least say when?
The girl was interrupted by a coughing fit, and Thistle could see a great deal of concern on Miss Ratchet's face.
Ah, so this must be the sister she was talking about. But then, is this girl actually 10 years old? She's so tiny. Definitely the right decision not to give her a Pokemon. No way someone so small and sickly could train a Pokemon well.
Are you okay, Rosie?
Sorry, there were worse ones earlier today, but I think I'm on the mend.
Ruby Ratchet put a blanket over her little sister and brought her over to the fireplace. There was a small log there that Ruby worked hard to get burning. It was something a fire Pokemon could probably have done in seconds, but there were no Pokemon in that building that Thistle could see. Near the fire, Rosella shivered and launched into more coughing.
So,
she croaked,
when do I get my first Pokemon?
The little girl's eyes were full of hope. Ruby looked away so that her little sister couldn't see the tears welling up in her eyes.
I don't know. He said there was still a lot to do before the end of the year. So probably not until after New Year's Eve.
Rosella nodded.
I can't wait. Once I get a Pokemon, I'll be able to catch more. Then we can have some here that will help with the chores. And when I become the very best, then everything will be so much better for us.
Wiping away her tears, Ruby looked over to her sister and smiled.
I can't wait, Rosie.
She hugged her sister close as they both stared at the small and dying fire.
I can't wait.
Oh, just tell her the truth, Miss Ratchet. You know I won't be giving away any Pokemon to this girl. Why build up her dreams like that? The sooner she wakes up to reality, the better.
Without warning, the hunter appeared right before Professor Thistle, his huge eyes only inches away. The man let out a shriek and stumbled backward and landed on something soft and a little springy. The menacing glare of the hunter still lingered before him, but as the professor blinked, the image grew fainter and fainter. Once the spirit was out of sight, Thistle began to realize he was back home, and had landed on his warm and cozy bed.
To be continued.